The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. This is going to be a slightly confused talk. I was slightly confused this morning, but we're celebrating the festival for Great Master Dogen, and it mentioned in the offertory that he went to China because he wasn't happy with the depth of understanding he found in the Japanese teaching at that time. And in the midst of this trip, there was a great typhoon that his little boat had to go through. And he was praying for some help and had a lovely vision of Kanzian sitting on a lotus while in the midst of this typhoon. And, but he managed to get to China safely, and when he first heard someone speaking the Kesa verse after a morning's meditation, we put on our Kesas and say, how great and wondrous are the clothes of enlightenment, formless yet embracing every treasure. I wish to unfold the Buddha's teaching that I may help all living things. When he first heard that, he was so moved by it, he cried, because he hadn't seen anybody being that devout in their practice at the time. And although he came from a very noble family, he was willing to give up all the property and titles and everything in order to find the truth. And so we're very grateful for his efforts, because that river of the Dharma that flows through his teaching is still nourishing us today. And I want to talk about a story from the Shobo Genzo. The name of this chapter is Jinshin Inga, and it's called On the Absolute Certainty of Cause and Effect. And this is a story, a very famous story, that's been talked about in lots of literature. And I'll read the quote just as Master Hubert translated it. Hyakujo Ikai was the Dharma heir of Basso. Whenever people came to hear him give public Dharma talks, there was an old man who always came into the Dharma hall immediately following those in the monastic assembly. He always listened to the Dharma talk, and then, when the monks would leave the hall, he would leave at the same time. And then one day he lingered behind. Thereupon the master asked him, "You who are standing there, who are you?" The old man replied, "To speak truly, I'm a non-human being. Long ago, during the eon of Gassho Buddha, I dwelt upon this mountain as abbot. Then one day a trainee asked me, 'Is even the one who does the great practice still subject to cause and effect?' I replied that such a one is no longer subject to cause and effect. After that, as a consequence, I was reduced to being reborn as a wild fox for 500 lives. I now beseech you, venerable monk, say something that will turn me around, for I long to rid myself of this wild fox's attitude of mind." Whereupon he asked the master, is even someone who does the great practice subject to cause and effect? And the master replied, "Such a one is not blind to causality." And that what that means is everybody's effect is subject to cause and effect. And no matter what we do, we may be living in a state of great spiritual understanding, but if we haven't cleaned up our karma, like the Buddha's cousin Devadatta, who still hadn't, although he had a number of major religious experiences and had intimate real nature of understanding for all sorts of scriptures, he hadn't dealt with his ambition, and he tried to take over the Sangha, and the Buddha said, Buddha was in his 70s and getting old, and says, I can see why Devadatta got upset with this, but the translation I read was, the Buddha said, I'm not going to turn over anything to a piece of spittle like you. And he was very upset by it. And tried to kill the Buddha a couple of times and got himself into major trouble. But even he will become a Buddha, because the law of karma is simply the law of cause and effect in a moral and spiritual realm. And we, when we do virtuous things, we get merit. When we do unvirtuous things, we get non-merit. And we, there are consequences. And in this case, this venerable abbot spent 500 years as a wild fox because he didn't give out correct teaching. And that can really mislead people. And when you understand the nature of this absolute certainty of cause and effect, it isn't a problem. Actually, River Master used to say, well, I'm not afraid of karma, because karma just works. It is part of the Buddha nature, and it helps us. We experience suffering as a result of actions that were unwise, but that suffering is there to help us come to the training and do something about changing ourselves. And if we didn't have this suffering, we would become lazy and complacent and make no efforts. The suffering has the Buddha nature, and even the people who are dwelling in the worst of hells getting unremitting pain, they're burning up their old karma, and they will eventually become a Buddha. But it's better to stay out of those places if you can. We don't recommend that. We recommend training and keeping the precepts. Karma is an independent law of the universe. It's just like the law of gravity. There's no lawgiver. There's nobody who's had a bad day that morning handing out bad sentences like some judge with an argument with his wife or something. It just works impersonally. And the more training that we do in our lives, the more spiritual practice, the more meditation, the more we keep the precepts, the more we devote ourselves to helping others, the less unpleasant karmic consequences we'll get at the time of death. But at the time of death, there's this thing that happens where we get to look at our lives, and we're not judged, but we judge ourselves. And if our unvirtuous actions are greater than our virtuous actions, we're likely to judge ourselves as being unworthy of moving on and end up in a world of the animals or hungry ghosts or in the hells. But the important thing is to learn from whatever it is that comes your way. And this kind of, there's a beautiful poem I'm going to get to later, but I got to read it a couple of times because it's just really helpful. It's called The Guest House. This human being is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat them, each guest, honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing, invite them in. Also, let them go, too. Be grateful for whoever comes, because he has been sent as a guide from beyond. That wasn't written by Dogen, that was written by Rumi, but it has to do with understanding this law of karma. And I looked through the Shobo Genzo to see if I could find out, I wanted to see if Dogen had written anything on the paramita of patience, and I only found just a very small reference to that in a chapter called What the Buddha Taught, where he simply says, quotes, the vehicle of the bodhisattva, those who realize fully perfected supreme enlightenment by putting into practice the teachings of the six paramitas, that is, the six practices that ferry all sentient beings to the other shore, That's what paramita means. The practice of freely giving wealth of or dharma, the practice of observing the precepts, the practice of patience, the practice of zealous devotion, the practice of meditation, the practice of wise discernment. All these together constitute supreme enlightenment. Well, he doesn't talk much about patience, but there's a very famous story of a past life of the Buddha who is then called Kshantivartin. Kshanti is the Sanskrit word for patience. And Kshantivartin was the king of this area of India, and he didn't want to be a king. He wanted to be a monk. And he renounced the throne, and he had a little brother who was an infant at that time, and he went off into the woods to do his practice. And that little brother grew up and became the king of this particular kingdom. And one day he was out in the woods there, and in the jungle and whatever forest. And they had a big picnic, and the king fell asleep. And this happens to be the same forest that Kshantivartin was in, and all the ministers and their wives and things, they knew about Kshantivartin, and they wanted to go over and listen to his teaching. And so they all went away. The king was sound asleep, and they all went to listen to Kshantivartin give a dharma talk. And the king woke up, and he was furious. There was nobody there. And he was all by himself, and he was stomping around the forest looking for where all his ministers and his wives and things were, and he found them all listening to Kshantivartin. And he says, "Who are you?" And he says, "I'm Kshantivartin." I said, "Well, if you're so patient, you take this." And he cuts off his hand. And he says, "Can you handle that?" And Kshantivartin says, "Yes." And he cuts off his other hand or other arm or something. "Can you handle that?" He says, "Yes." So he cuts off his head. "Can you handle that?" And he said, "Yes." And his dying thought was, "I'd like to be able to, when I become a Buddha, free this man of his suffering." And that was his dying thought, was to help this being who is angry. And after he chopped up Kshantivartin, he found out that that was his brother. And of course, he felt really badly about the whole situation. But the point is that the bodhisattva's dying thought was this desire to help this other being. And in the Shishogi, which is the kind of the condensed version of all of Dogen's teaching that was done in the 19th century, he talks about the five chapters. One is the first one is to find what is the purpose in your life. And he talks about that we all have this purpose of understanding about birth and death. What are we here for? What is the reason that we get born as a human being and experience this existence? And that's all about the law of karma, about how the great heresy is not heresy being a doctrinal problem, but not understanding that if we do evil, thinking that we're not going to get the consequences just by not recognizing this is evil, that's just ignorance. And we still get the karmic consequences of this. Master Yu used to point out Richard Nixon as a really good example of a Buddha that was showing us what not to do. He really thought that he was the best person at the job, and that for the job, and that gave him the right to do whatever he needed to do to make sure he got elected. And as a result of his illegal activities, he lost the job. And it was a really good public display of how karma works. You know, you just can't go around breaking the laws and thinking that there's some way to avoid the consequences. And that's why Dogen talks about this absolute certainty of the law of cause and effect. And it doesn't always happen in this lifetime. That's why you have to understand that rebirth and this happens over a much bigger picture than our just one individual life. And so the first person to get enlightened by the Buddha was one of the five ascetics who practiced with him and who deserted him when he decided that he'd go in the middle way and get a little rest and eat a little something and be a normal person. But after his understanding, he went looking for them. And they made an agreement. You know, they saw him coming. We're not going to say anything to this guy. You know, he's gone soft on us. But then he got up there and they thought, my God, what's happened to him? And so they came and wanted to hear what he had to say. And Anjata Kundinya, Anjata means one who understands. And Kundinya was one of these ascetics. And the thing that he understood was this analogy that the Buddha used between, this is when we get to the poem, the guest and the host. The host stays at the guest house and the travelers come and go. And that he realized that the Buddha nature, the ultimate host here, stays and beings come and go. And that was enough to open his heart to the unborn, to just really give himself, entrust himself to the unborn. And he had a major understanding, just hearing the Buddha's talk about this particular image. And the story, the chapter in the Shishogi about the opening up the Buddha mind is talking mostly about the four wisdoms, because wisdom is one of the six paramitas. And he talks about, Dogen talks about the wisdom of generosity, giving, whatever you have, dharma or wealth. There was a great story in a book I read recently about this very wealthy man who comes to the Buddha and says, I just can't even imagine giving a piece of food to somebody who needs food. Just, I can't even imagine that. And the Buddha said, well, try this. He says, take a piece of food that you're not particularly interested in and maybe you don't even like in your right hand, put it in your left hand and think of that as giving the food to somebody who's hungry. He says, well, you can do that. Then come back. So he does that, and finally he's able to do that. And so the Buddha says, well, now try it with a piece of cloth or some coins. Take it from your right hand, put it into your left hand. And he got so he could do that. You know, after a while, he just had to do this every day and just get the idea. And so he comes back, and the Buddha says, okay, now you're ready to be able to be a generous person. So you can give food to the hungry and give money and clothes to the needy. And so he got really good at it. In fact, he got so good at it that he gave it all away and he became a monk. And he not only was so good at that, he became an arhat. But we have become familiar with this process of being willing to give. And what we really have to give is giving up our own suffering and giving up the self. Because that's the source of suffering, is this clinging to this idea of me. That's why the bodhisattva mind is so important, because you're putting the good of others ahead of you. Just like Kshantivartin, who thought, well, I want to really help this man. And even though he's just cut off my head, he was in a place of understanding absolute truth. And in that place, having your head cut off isn't a big deal anymore. And there's another story about that, about Atisha was the monk that brought, one of the monks that very early on in the 9th or 10th century, I guess it was 10th century, he was born. He was from India, and he had studied with all the major teachers in the islanders in Sumatra, are one of the islands in Indonesia called what's called Serling at that point. And his name was Serling Pa. And Serling, every time Serling's name was mentioned to Atisha, he'd put his hands to his heart and he'd start crying. And they asked him if that teacher was somehow different from the other teachers in terms of what he was teaching. He said, no, but he taught me bodhicitta. He taught me this bodhisattva mind of how important it is to give to people. And this particular monk, before he had completely realized bodhicitta, there was this man in Indonesia there who was sick, and the only thing that was going to help this man, according to the doctors, was to be able to eat a piece of human flesh. And so he said, well, if it's really going to save your life, I'll give you some. So he cuts off part of his leg, of Phara's thigh, and gives it to him, and the man is cured. But he hadn't completely gone as far as he needed to go into the absolute truth here, and it really hurt. So that night he was lying in bed, and it was hard to get to sleep. But finally, just before dawn, he fell asleep, and he had this dream that this beautiful young man came and passed his hand over his leg and blessed it. And it turned out to be Avalokiteshvara. And when he woke up, his leg was healed, and he had a new level of understanding. And most of the time, when Buddhist teaching is talking about patience, they're talking about it in terms of enduring some painful, difficult thing. And so it's translated as patient endurance, and or this ability to withstand difficult or painful or suffering situations. I read a recent book by Thich Nhat Hanh about where he talks about patience in a very different way, and it was just inspiring to me because he talks about it as inclusiveness. And he talks about the fact that this Chinese characters for Gashanti has been translated into Chinese, and it has a heart, a picture of a heart at the bottom, and above that is a sharp knife. And what he says is that you've got to open your heart to those sharp things and to be big enough to hold them so they don't hurt anybody. And he said the example he gave was the Buddha saying that if you take a handful of sand and you put it in a bowl of water, you can't drink that. But if you take this of salt, if you take salt and fill it in a bowl of water, you can't drink it. But if you put a handful of salt in a river, no problem. And it's this opening the heart, which is what Rumi is talking about here. And I'll read this again. This human being is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing, invite them in, and invite them to leave too. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Carla sent me this link to a program on the internet about a woman who was diagnosed with schizophrenia because she was hearing voices. And she went through a whole bunch of treatments for mental illness and finally learned that those voices, she had to understand what those voices were really telling her, and was able to understand them. She became a professional psychologist, and has a group now that helps people who are hearing voices. But this woman had to realize that that voice was telling her something, and she had to learn what it was. And it wasn't necessarily the literal meaning of, go take the water and dump it on the teacher's head. It was learning that there may be some anger that you're suppressing there. And she had to learn to understand what those voices were about. And as a result of that, she was able to then become not only sane and helpful to other people, but she has, a real grasp of what Rumi is talking about here, which is that the stuff that comes into your mind, you can learn from it. And there isn't anything that it doesn't have the Buddha nature. And what we have to do, however, is we have to learn to welcome these things and learn from them. We have to have a heart that's open up enough, so that we can hold the painful things and not turn them into suffering. Because the suffering is taking this painful sensation, this thing that says, I don't want this, or I don't like this, or I'm not getting what I want, or I'm not having this or whatever, taking all those likes and dislikes, those fears, the angers, frustrations, greeds, and learning from them. Because they are part of you, and you have to, in order to have to learn from them, your heart has to be big enough to hold them, and hold them in a way that allows you to let that karma get cleansed. And Master Ji used to say, the cleansing of the karma is simply having this thing pass through. You don't have to fix it, you don't have to make it right, you don't have to somehow even like it or dislike it. Just let it go through. Because the feelings themselves are the results of actions. Action creates the karma, and the result is feelings. So when you're feeling upset or angry or fearful or whatever, and you can just hold that, include that, recognize that within yourself there is this anger or this fear or this idea or opinion or something, but all of the suffering is there because we cling to our liking and disliking, this picking and choosing. And we have to see that it's possible to open your heart to that and have it there and not be disturbed by that. And this is what the meditation is about. It's taking refuge in the eternal. Dogen's instructions on meditation is to neither try to think nor try not to think. And Master Kodo had this wonderful article from Master Koten where he's talking about what that actually means. And a lot of people have translated that as try not thinking or all sorts of strange things about that. But he says what it is that you entrust yourself to the eternal. Entrust those angry thoughts to the eternal. Entrust all your worries and fears and all your concerns about your family and all your likes and entrust them to the eternal. Just sit, neither trying to think nor trying not to think. And that holding those things in a heart that's wide enough to not be distracted by them. And this is the gift we have from Dogen telling us how to get in touch with the eternal. It's just doing your meditation, and the more meditation that you do, the more you become familiar with this process. Giving the thought to the, giving the food to the beggar, giving the money to the poor person, just giving up the self. Letting go of the fear, letting go of the anger, letting go of the ideas and opinions, letting go of the stuff you don't want or don't like, letting go of the stuff that you do want and you do like, and thinking that somehow that all that stuff, all the external things, those are all the things you have to learn to let go of. Whether it's the people that we hold on to and love, or whether the people we push away, that's what he's talking about in the first chapter of the Shishogi. You can't rely on wealth or power or possessions or family, friends. You know, you have to enter death just by yourself with your own good and bad karma. And that willingness to see what it is to let go of the self there, to just be willing to come back to being still, to open your heart to the reality of the unborn, which is there all the time. But we have to learn to listen to that. And Vivian gave a talk a couple of times about Mother Teresa, who was asked, what does she do when she prays? And she says, I listen. And they said, well, what does God do? What does God say? And she said, he listens. And this listening is what you're doing in meditation. You're just listening to that stillness. You're just coming back to the place that is undisturbed. And it's the place that holds all of that suffering. Because the suffering is there only to show us where our ignorance is. And we have something to learn. And if we're able to just come back to being still over and over again, being still there, being willing to just open our hearts and trust yourself to the eternal. I remember looking up the word commitment once when I first moved to Santa Barbara, because I was talking about committing ourselves to the precepts, and there was a lovely quote from the in the dictionary. It was my father's old 1928 dictionary, Webster's dictionary, that said, and a quote from the Bible, commit thy way unto the Lord. And that's entrusting yourself. Entrust yourself to the Lord. And this is what Dogen's great floodgates that he opened of the Dharma is about, is to show us how to convert that suffering. And we have this wonderful water of the Spirit that flows through us. But we have to make our heart big enough so we're not closing those gates. We have to open that heart so that, the love of the eternal can pass through us, and we can be a vehicle through which the karma is cleansed. We can be a vehicle through which other people are helped. We can be a vehicle through which we can let go of our suffering. But it's up to each of us to learn how to do this, and this is our job.